Accession number 18676, Reel 4.
I was going to throw him overboard. So anyway, we all jumped on Joe. And believe me, he took some holding because, as I say, he was a keep fitting addict. Anyway, we quietened him down and we got him out to the mess and down below and into his cabin. And yeah, another thing that sticks out was when we went apparently across the Atlantic to within about a day's sailing of America. This was to miss U-boats and air attacks. And then we come back and we were anchored outside Lagos to take on water. And we were there one night. And I remember this night, oh, it was a lovely night. The sky was beautiful. You don't see skies like it in England. It was absolutely like black velvet, where the stars were just like diamonds. Beautiful night. And I remember there was quite a few of us and we were sat on the deck. And we had a pint of lager apiece. And we were singing anything that came into our minds. And one of them that we sang was Moonlight Bay. And by God, it did harmonise well, and I can just sit and see us now and hear it. And this beautiful sky, it really was. It was something that stuck in my memory. Anyway, we went off again, and we finished up at Cape Town. And we got off ship about 2 o'clock. And we were allowed off until 11. And they said, like, that quite a few of the local population were offering hospitality, and it was all right to accept it, but you must be back before 11. Anyway, it was an English lady who stopped us and asked us if we would like a ride round Cape Town and a trip up Table Mount. And who was it? It was me, Tommy Option and Billy Bloomfield, that's right. So I said, yes, thank you very much. So we got in the car and away we went. She was a very nice lady. Unfortunately, again, I just can't think of her name. But she came from Nottingham. And she'd been a nurse in the First World War. And she'd married this South African. And then, of course, after the war, she'd gone out there. And her husband had a garage and car showroom at a little place, a little suburb called Camps Bay, just outside Cape Town. Anyway, we went round Cape Town and we went up Table Mountain. We didn't get to the top, but if I remember right, about 2/3 of the way up, there was this big observation car park. And we stayed there about a quarter of an hour admiring the view, because it was a wonderful view of Cape Town. And we came down, and we came through Camps Bay. But we didn't stop. She said, no, she said, I won't stop. She said, we'll come out tomorrow and have a day here. And I want to take you to tea in town. Which she did, and she took us to the railway hotel. Lovely restaurant. And while we were there, this train pulled in. We offered to pay our share, and she wouldn't even accept a box of chocolate off us. Anyway, after tea, we came out onto the street again. She said, well, look, boy, she said, I'll tell you what. She said, I'll go now. I'll see to my husband. She said, I needn't to book service, she says, because we've got, you know, native servants. But she says, I'll leave you to have a stroll round on your own, do what you want to do. And then, if you get off ship tomorrow, she gave us a telephone number, give me a ring and I'll come and pick you up and we'll spend the day at Camps Bay. We got back to the ship and as soon as we got on board, the rumour was, oh, that's it, you're not getting off no more, we're sailing. So I said, well, I said, how do you know that, you know? Oh, yes, it's all right, yes. It's the Rail Mackay is this. Anyway, it was. 5 o'clock in the morning, we slipped the moorings and we were away. And we went to Durban, took it about 3 days. Now at Durban, things were a bit funny. The vote was challenging Jan Smuts for premiership, and he was pro-Hitler, and he was also for apartheid. He was the bloke who brought it in when he toppled Jan Smuts. So instead of us being allowed into Durban town, we were marched from the ship to the beach at Durban. And we got there about 2:15 and we were allowed onto the beach and promenade, but we weren't allowed to leave the promenade. And all the roads at the back of the promenade were patrolled by MPs. Anyway, we were allowed onto the beach and there were shops on the promenade and such like, so it was quite an enjoyable afternoon. But of course it would have been better if we could have seen Durban. 6 o'clock they gathered us up and we were marched back again. And that night we sailed and we got to Suez, Port Tewfik, which was Suez. Port Suez, Suez Canal, but Tewfik was the actual name of the port. And I got 2 or 3 photographs there. And then we went from there to Geneva on the Bitter Lakes on Suez Canal. And that was a big base holding camp for acclimatising troops. So I think that's about all I have regarding the voyage out. It was pretty uneventful. And as I said, we were fortunate in our accommodation. Now, the next lot that came out after us was as different as chalk and cheese. They'd been completely fitted out as troop ships. And it was a question of you were packed like sardines in a tin. Everybody. Anyway, I think that's about it. So we'll come on to the photographs. This is Table Mountain at Cape Town. It was taken on the 28th of August 1940. This is one of the bum boats trying to flog fruit, etc., when we arrived at Port Tewfik at Suez in the 18th of September 1940. This is some of the troops disembarking into lighters from the SS Franconia at Port Tewfik, 18th of September 1940. This is a lighter load of the men being landed at Port Tewfik. They were just flat-bottom barges and they were just pulled along by a tug. It was the 18th of September again, 1940. This was our last view of the Franconia. that had taken us out from Glasgow to Suez. Brings back some memories, does that photograph. This is a view outside the tent door at Geneva. It was a stretch about 15 miles long along the shores of the Bitter Lakes, and it literally held about 15,000 troops. Each unit was allocated its own area and was responsible for its own feeding and everything else. You ran as individual units, but it was a holding camp. But as I say, at one time there was over 15,000 troops there. We were stationed in this base area, the idea being to get you acclimatised to the climate and the conditions. So of course we still had square bashing even out there. And this is some of our lads on the twice daily parade. This was Harry Sharp, the bugler. His name was Mud when he used to blow reveille. This is one of the camels belonging to the Bedouins that used to wander around the camps. You had to watch these for biting and for spitting at you. And the Bedouins were always wandering around trying to swap eggs for tea, dried tea leaves, or with copper urns. And the cry was, ice cold lemonade, ice cold lemonade, very good for the belly. And if you had it, you'd get dysentery. Well, you couldn't keep them out. There was no fencing around the camp, you see. And the main road ran through it. Here's a photograph of some of the lads. Left to right was Corporal Ord. He was in the field hygiene section. Corporal Statham, he was in the orderly room. Sergeant Smith, he was Wardmaster with me at one time, and Lance Corporal Cleary, never known as anything else but One Stripe Cleary. He was in the dental corps, and he was a very fine dental technician. He really was when it came to making false teeth. He was a first class tradesman. And the dental corps, there was three of them, and as time went on, those three formed a comedy act, and every time we held a concert, you can bet your life that those three lads put on a first class performance, and they really were really funny, and everybody thought that a chap called Ives was the brains behind it. But we found out after Ives left that it was this man here, this One Stripe Cleary, who was the brains behind all the comedy sketches. But they were good. Bath time at Geneva. This is a lad going in for a bathe at the Bitter Lakes. And you'll notice how shallow the slope was. You could go out about a couple of hundred yards without getting out of your depth. The ships used to pass in the middle of the lake. That was where it was deepest. The Bitter Lakes would be what? 3 to 4 miles wide, I would say, in that area. And the ships used to pass down the middle. You'll notice quite a few had no bathing trunks. This was yours truly outside the tent at Geneva, 1940. And this contraption here, this wickerwork contraption there, that was your bed. And it was like a box with the top hinged on two lumps of wire, so that when it came to moving them, they could pack them flat. Unfortunately, they weren't very strong. And after about 3 weeks, you were very near bent double with them sagging in the middle. This is Tommy Hutchin and myself, and we've received the first batch of mail.
I'm sorry, it was about the 2nd of December, and that was the first mail that I had. And this is Tommy Hutchin, and I'm very welcome to photograph them to all my rich family. It was in very, 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 very accent. Crawford, German, all the crook. I need to work on the road, but to be absolutely certain.
They were the last of the photographs that I took at Geneva. There's just a couple of things I'd like to bring out. But while we were at Geneva, that Wavell's push started, where with very few troops, he captured literally thousands and thousands of Italian prisoners. The main armaments, or one of the main armaments he had, was armoured cars, and they belonged to the 11th Hussars, the cherry pickers, and they'd been in Palestine when war broke out, and they moved them over to Egypt. and these armoured cars were Rolls-Royce engined, and they were from 1925, and they did yeoman service right through Wavell's push. I don't think they were used any more after that, but they certainly did service during Wavell's push. The other thing was the bathing on the Bitter Lakes. That was on in an afternoon. And there was an Arab down on the shores, and he used to go fishing with this small dhow on the Bitter Lakes. Anyway, he'd been there with this boat pulled up on the beach two or three times when we'd been there. So we finally got him to agree to us hiring it. And there was Jack Tate, myself, Joe Smith and Les Gapper. That was the four of us. And we eventually talked this wog into hiring us the boat for a couple of hours. And was anybody used to handling a boat? Because, of course, we didn't want him with us, we just wanted to go on our own. And Jack Tate had worked in the shipyards at one time as an electrician. So Jack was he was a sailor of the four of us. Oh yes, Jack knew how to handle boats like. So we did this, and we had quite an enjoyable afternoon, and did a bit of bathing and a bit of sailing up and down the Bitter Lakes. Anyway, we did this for three or four times. Not every day, but occasionally when he was there, this boatman, as soon as the bathing parade had got down to the beach, like, we saw which officer was in charge and said all right for us to go sailing, and they knew, like, that we'd done it before. So yes, right, only. Anyway, this particular day we hired the boat about 2 o'clock for 2 hours again, and away we went. About 3:15 we were fairly well out in the middle of the lake, but we always kept clear of the shipping lane. We didn't want to get involved with out there. And this wind got up. Came from nowhere, did this wind. And it got choppy. And God, did this boat move. And by this time, we were past where we'd hired the boat. And it meant we had to try and tack back to get to it. Well, we tried always. And we couldn't get back. We were going round in circles and all sorts. So by this time it was, way after 4 o'clock. We were still faffing about trying to get back. Anyway, it got to about nearly 5 o'clock. And I suddenly remembered that I was Audley Sergeant Major that night. And my duty started at 1800 hours, 6 o'clock. That was when you took over, and you were Audley Sergeant Major for 24 hours. So I said to Jack, I says, well, I said, we're going to have to do some of this. I said, I'm Audley Sergeant Major. So I says, all right, he says, we'll beat you. Now, this boat had a keel that you could lift up for beaching them. And we made a run for the shore. And Joe Smith and me, we got hold of the handle that lifted this keel. It was like a T-handle through a bar. And Jack was helmsman. And Jack said, right, when I say right, he says, up with keel, because he says, we don't want to rip that off. He says, it cost us a fortune. Anyway, he gave the word, we up the keel. And we charged up this beach, literally. It just shot up the beach and we were dry. You could step out onto dry land. So, Joe Smith said he would walk and get the boatman. So Joe set off. And what we did, we gradually eased the boat back nearer the water so that it was just to stay afloat. And about an hour later, Joe comes back with the boatman. And apparently all he'd been interested in was that we hadn't damaged the boat. So when he saw that the boat was all right and we'd lifted the keel and everything, he was quite happy. So we all piled into the boat and he sailed it. Well, of course he knew how to sail it, and they just beat up the Bitter Lakes back to the spot where we'd hired it, near this hut. And that was that. Unfortunately, by this time, it was way gone 6 o'clock. So by the time we got back to camp, oh, we gave the boatman another pound for trouble, like, and being over time, and he was delighted with that. Well, by the time we got back to camp, it was after 7 o'clock. Well, I went into the tent to get toffed up for to Audley Sergeant Major, properly dressed in proper uniform, etc. And in come the Sergeant Major. You're on a charge. I said, on a charge? What for? He says, you're Audley Sergeant Major, Miss Parade. And I thought at first he was joking, but he wasn't. Anyway, I went down and I saw all the pickets were all out on the proper jobs and everything else, like. Went back to the mess. Because they all, you always have to stop either at the mess or in your tent so that any of the pickets knew where they could contact you. When we're in the tent, in the mess, there's Joe Smith. He says, has Sergeant Major booked you? I says, yeah. I says, you can thank Staff Sergeant Ball. He didn't call him Staff Sergeant Ball. He says, you can thank Billy Ball for that. I says, why? Oh, he says, he was going on ranting and raving because we had dinner at tea time. You just had a light lunch and then you had dinner in the evening. Oh, he says, we're going somewhat rotten about it. Us four could get away with murder. And to this Sergeant Major Williams, what are you going to do about it and all this? Well, as I told you, this Sergeant Major Williams was a very weak bloke. He didn't know much about the army at all. So, persuaded by Ball, he put me on a charge. So, I always remember next morning, they were going on a rope march, you know, acclimatising them. But I had to stay behind, like, because I was on a charge and I was at the orderly room at 9 o'clock. So, they were forming up, like, Sergeant Major wasn't going on a rope march, he was there to see to me on a charge, etc. And he had this Staff Sergeant Ball as escort, I think. Oh, that was a little bit of sop to Sergeant Ball. So I said to Sergeant Major, I says, is Sergeant Tate going on this route march? He says, yes. Well, I says, I'd like him as my witness, please. What do you want a witness for? I says, I need a witness. I says, I'm entitled to call any witness I want. I says, I want a witness. Well, I knew that Jack Tate had served under Colonel Foster, our CO, in peacetime. And always got on very well with him. Any time he saw Jack, this Colonel Foster always asked him how he was getting on and all this lot. Cut a long story short, I was marched in, like. They read the charge out, absent without leave. And then they brought another charge up. sailing on neutral waters. Anyway, so you also don't have anything to say, so I told him my tale like, but we died it. I said I'd like to call Sergeant Tate as witness.